Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Herd Fit Podcast with Dr. Sam Ree and myself, Coach David Syverson. This podcast is aimed at helping anyone and everyone looking to enhance their healthy lifestyle through fitness, nutrition, and most importantly, mindset. Welcome back to the Herd Fit Podcast. I am Coach David Syverson here with my co-host, Dr. and Coach Sam Ree. Sam Ree is fresh off an apparel change because he just got done working out doing this Thursday's WOD Team Black. It's all right. The awesome second place team from this year's Open. All right. Today, we are a week out from the Masters quarterfinals, so we are going to do a recap next week with a couple of athletes that are participating over the weekend. So this is kind of like a little bit of a transition week for us with the podcast, and it was a good time for us to throw in our second ever Q&A session. If you remember back about 2 months ago, we sent out a post saying, hey, we'd love to do some more Q&As. What do you guys want to listen to? What do you guys want specific answers to? And we got over 24 questions, so we're just going to kind of, you know, chip away at them over the course of the year when we have a time like this. And so we have three more questions today, but before we get into that, I do want to just ask Sam how he's doing, what he's thinking about the quarterfinals coming up. What are you excited about? What are you nervous about? What's going through your head right now?
Well, we saw the individual quarterfinals and we saw those workouts. And so they're related most years, but not exactly the same. And sometimes they're very different, actually. Yeah. And I'm very psyched about our group. Mm-hmm. We have 20.
20.
And they look amazing.
They do.
I just saw them in open gym and they are so ready. Like, yeah, they're mentally ready. They're physically ready. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so excited. I know the workout is going to be challenging for me.
Yes.
But yep, I'm so excited to see how our athletes perform.
Yeah. And actually, give me a little contrast, because you and Kathleen were really the first two. You guys were the catalyst behind Masters qualifying beyond the Open. You guys were the first two. And that was the year right before COVID, if you remember back. It was that, mm-hmm, fall Open of October, but then the quarterfinals, which the Age Online qualifier wasn't until months later. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest difference between now and then, in contrast, and just when we're talking about the number of people participating? Does it help? Does it hurt? What do you think?
It certainly helps. I mean, well, first of all, I can't imagine how Kathleen felt just doing it all by herself that first year.
Yeah.
And then I was able to make it the following year. But I do like the fact that it's short between, mm-hmm, the Open and the quarterfinals. I do like the fact that we have all of these athletes that they're so capable. Mm-hmm. I think what it really – I mean, I don't like it because I'm about 3 years older now, so it's like tougher.
Right.
But when I see 20 people, and I saw how they did in the Open, mm-hmm, like that – gives me a lot of, I don't want to say hope, mm-hmm, but it gives me proof that anyone, I mean, listen, they're all very talented, but there are a lot of people that were just short of the cut line this, mm-hmm, year. And seeing that just makes me know that we're going to have more and more athletes in the future.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that it's a good goal for a lot of athletes who are relatively capable, mm-hmm, that they can actually make the quarterfinals, mm-hmm, and it is possible.
Yeah. And you got to put the work in, yeah, and right now. And, you know, in terms of Bosman is now really all entrenched in the programming, and you can already tell there's just a different flavor to his programming than what we got used to with Dave Castro, and it makes it very hard to predict. Like, I usually have a decent pulse on what we're going to see. I have no idea.
I was about to ask you. I mean, you're usually pretty good about it.
I mean, I really don't. I don't think we're going to see one rep max lift. Okay. All right, that's my first prediction. Just based on what Boz has said, I do think we're going to see crossovers now. At first, I said we're not going to see them, but I think we're going to see crossovers based on what he said on the Jason Grubb podcast.
Okay.
And I think you're going to see – you guys have five scores in 2 days. The Open division had five in 3 days. In my opinion, they're not going to make it tougher physically for Masters. So I don't think you guys are going to be doing five workouts. I think you will be doing four workouts, and one of them will have two scores. So that's my last kind of thing. But, you know, just to echo Sam, really excited to see how everyone does. And I think it's a great opportunity for all 20 athletes and the entire gym to come out and support each other. And just know that there are going to be athletes that crush certain workouts and then get crushed. And yep, then vice versa. And that's one of the advantages, in my opinion, of having a big group. You and Kathleen, for example, are relatively similar athletes, right? In terms of like what your strengths, what your weaknesses are.
Yeah, she has more gymnastic skill.
And you're a little bit more of a lifter, a little bit more like mobility, that kind of stuff. But in terms of your scores, you're pretty similar, right?
We have been, yeah.
And
You're not going to see that in this year's group. You're going to see certain people just get crushed by weights and then crush the gymnastics and then vice versa. And I think it's really cool. It can actually connect some of these athletes on a deeper emotional level, knowing that, hey, we went through the same thing this weekend, even though it was in complete different spectrums. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch that. So let's get into these the three questions that we're going to go over today. Again, as usual, probably about 5 to 10 minutes on each. Not going to go crazy, but we'll let the conversation take us where it will. Okay. So the first question, speaking of competitions online, what do you think about online competitions having blind leaderboards? So let's explain what a blind leaderboard is first for those that don't know. And the quarterfinals is a relatively, it's kind of like a half blind leaderboard. Basically, okay, when you submit a score during the open, your score immediately appears on the games leaderboard, okay? When these guys have the competition this week in the quarterfinals, they will submit their scores whenever. It does not show up until after the deadline. So basically what this does is it makes it more like a real competition. You don't know how other people did. You can't use other people's scores as a gauge to chase. You just have to give your best effort. You submit your score and you keep your fingers crossed. And that is a growing trend in online competing. Legends does this, right? Legends sends out 6 workouts in August, and you don't know a single score until 3 weeks later after every deadline has passed. So you can't be like, oh, that person got 8 more reps than me. I'm going to go try and beat them. You don't know until it's too late. So that's what the blind leaderboard concept is. And, you know, if you go to a local competition, right, we have a couple local competitions coming up in this area, you can actually know what place you came in event 1 before event 2 starts. So you know exactly like who's in front of you, who do you need to beat, who do you need to run away from. And it what that does, it kind of creates an unfair advantage for the person going after you that they're shooting after a number, right? Like I shoot after numbers here all the time on our Bison whiteboard leaderboard daily. Oh, so-and-so got this, I'm going to try to get that. It's not fair. I always say that on this podcast, right? You didn't really beat anyone if you saw their score and then beat it. You really didn't, right? So you have to kind of get away from that thought. What are your opening thoughts on what a blind leaderboard is, what it does for competition, what it does for the competitor?
There's a lot of strategy involved, one versus the other, right? So the CrossFit Open is an open leaderboard, right? You see scores as they're posted. Yep. You can get an idea of where you're sitting as, you know, as like literally in a day or two after they post the workouts. Mm-hmm. And athletes, especially games athletes, before when it meant a lot before they did the quarterfinals, they would wait until the very, 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 very end.
Good point.
To submit their scores. Mm-hmm. And they would be looking at everyone and knowing what, you know, where they needed to be. And even now, like for our athletes competing for quarterfinals, they have a sense after 1 or 2 days where they're sitting with that event, and then they'll see if they want to redo it. And mm-hmm. we had a lot of people do that because they knew where they were sort of sitting based on those scores submitted, and then they were going to try to do it again.
Right.
So from a strategy standpoint, like you said, if you're chasing, if you're the chaser,
right,
being in an open leaderboard is so helpful.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. The second thing is a half-blind leaderboard like the quarterfinals where you post scores on Saturday and you get to see those before before the Sunday scores.
Yep.
That also helps you in terms of chasing someone for those last couple events.
Right.
You know you have to crush those. Mm-hmm. You know you have to do that. I prefer, from a competition standpoint, personally, a blind leaderboard. Mm-hmm. Like, totally blind. Mm-hmm. It allows you to do your best effort without knowing what anyone else is. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, and remember Legends last year, when you did the online qualifiers, you talked to a lot of people, or not a lot, but some,
right,
to get a sense of your performance,
right,
and see where you're sitting. Mm-hmm. So are blind leaderboards truly like blind?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I talked to a lot of athletes that I've competed at Legends on Instagram, and last year I did not have to do the qualifiers, but I did get scores from other athletes to help our current athletes out that were doing it. They're like, all right, what do I need to get on this? I'm like, dude, I don't know. Let me see if I can find some scores, and you share them, and you know, maybe I give them some of my athlete scores, and, you know, a little bit of a trade-off. But that is kind of taking away the value of the blind leaderboard, or at least the point of it, right? And I like what you said, is if you're the chaser, you want the open leaderboard. If you're getting chased, you want everything quiet. You want everything in the dark. And what are your thoughts if the Open did this next year? Because, and I have an opinion about this, I actually think would make the Open more enjoyable for people, okay? if the Open went completely blind, meaning the workout comes out Thursday, 3 p.m., and nothing is posted online leaderboard until Monday night, 8 p.m., what would you think about that? Even though it's different, the Open isn't only about competition. But what is the, if it's not about competition, why do you care what the score is on the leaderboard? So what are your thoughts if the Open did that? Because I want to share mine after.
The first thing is my guess would be the absolute performance on each event would be slightly lower.
Agreed.
Because people would not have something to chase. It's always easier once you see someone do it and then you're like, 180 reps? I can do 180 mm-hmm. reps. The second thing is I think the more competitive athletes might do better. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. The ones who actually perform better under pressure maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there might actually be more redos for some people because they're really afraid yeah. of where they are. And yeah. so every event counts more because and you can't see where you're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, I need to get two more reps. I need to get two more reps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you might actually see more injuries because people are redoing more.
It's a good point. I didn't even think about the injury angle to it. I have two thoughts on it. One of them is we can say that most athletes do better when they're pursuing a number. I actually believe that there's an equal amount of athletes that leave something on the table because they chased after a number, but they could have gone even further. But they just tried to beat that one person by one rep, or they just tried to beat that person's tiebreaker by 10 seconds, right? That if they didn't have something to shoot for, they actually, but they were worried about their score not being good enough, not getting to their goal, they would have actually pushed harder than that, right? It's almost like if you were going to go try and PR 2K row and your PR was 6:45, and then you're just like, you have this pace on your monitor, you're trying to get 6:45, you gut your way to a 6:43. I wonder that if you didn't have this 6:45 in your head, if you just went into it and be like, I don't know what my PR is, I'm not going to know what it was until after I do this, I bet you get a 6:35.
Now, you're talking about a blind leaderboard for the all five events?
Yeah. No, per week. I would say per week. Yeah, but that's actually another angle that would be fun too.
Only because I think I would have to go so hard on each event. Because like, for example, the last event.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Like last event, I knew I was sort of okay.
Yeah.
So I knew where I had to go with it.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I know if I just make it. So, but if I didn't know.
I
had
to push harder.
I would have pushed so hard because I had four scores. I didn't know where I was. I was like, am I in? Am I not in?
Yep.
Who knows? And every week I would I feel like I'm killing myself every week, but I would probably have to try even harder every week.
Yeah. And I actually think it would be less stressful for athletes. At first, people might say, no, I need to know where I stand. But the amount of times people refresh their phone to see what percentile they ranked in from Saturday, Sunday, and then like, oh my God, I'm nosediving on Monday. It's like, what if you just weren't allowed to look at it until Monday, right?
but how about all the people who like submit their score and be like, I'm number one in the world right now. Like you would rob them of that satisfaction.
That's true. All nine people. Yeah. So those are my thoughts. And then the last thing I would say about the blind leaderboard is relate this to your gym's whiteboard. If your gym records scores on a whiteboard at the gym, whether it's an app, a software, or physically writing on a whiteboard, you know, we've had this discussion many times. I'm sure we'll do an episode on this at some point. If the people that came in throughout the day didn't have any scores to chase, would that be a good or bad thing? I don't want to go down that rabbit hole yet because I want to move on to the next question. But just if you're having a hard time comprehending this, right? Imagine you come in after the 5 a.m., after the first class of the day, and there was never a score up there for you to pursue. Would that be good or bad for you, right? Would that help your fitness, hurt your fitness? Would it help your fun part of it? Would it hurt, you know, would it make you less competitive or more competitive? So that's kind of like where I want people to kind of just leave their thoughts on that. Do you have any extra thoughts before we
only move that on? The 5 a.m.ers should feel a sense of superiority because they never have a benchmark and they are the benchmark every day.
They are. And you know, they have a blind leaderboard every day.
Every day.
They come in and just set the tone. That's why it's a special group, those 5 a.m.ers. It's always been a special group of people. A, because they wake up so damn early, but B, they set the tone for the entire gym. You know, and then yes, the rest of the morning classes do too, but it helps to come in and see numbers. But the 5 a.m. is like they are the first ones there while we're all sleeping. All right. Next question. This is a little bit of a long question, so just stick with me and then I'll kind of dumb this down a little bit to make it a little bit more understandable. Which method do you feel could be more effective for getting stronger, faster, or getting through a plateau? Option A, train at moderate to hard pace, more days per week, and pick just a couple of days to go all out. Or train a little less often and always go all out. So this is a really common question. I don't always have the answer. I do have an opinion on it, though, and I'm sure Sam does too. The question is, hey, I want to get stronger. I want to get better at CrossFit. I want to increase my performance. Do I simply need to come in more often and just maybe tone it back a little bit, go 80% effort 4 or 5 days a week and then go all out twice a week? Or should I take a couple extra days off per week so that I can really fully recover, get that CNS ready, and then go all out on the 3 or 4 days that I do come in? Which one would be better for you? What are your opening thoughts?
So the first thing I did was I Googled, how do you get stronger faster? And
PEDs.
Right. Aside from that, the training methodology that most people espouse when they want to get stronger faster or break through a plateau is to increase training intensity while either maintaining or decreasing your volume. Okay. So if you are normally a 3 sets of 10 to 12 reps, this is mostly weightlifting.
Yep.
Decrease it to 3 sets to 6 to 8 reps with a heavier weight. So that's the traditional mindset for weightlifters. So how do you translate that into CrossFit training? So I think it depends on where you're sitting in terms of your fatigue level and your recovery, but I feel like for most people, you're going to do better if you decrease maybe your sessions and increase your intensity for those sessions. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the gestalt that I got. And honestly, I feel like a lot of us overtrain anyway. Yep. Just because we want the mental health benefits.
Yes.
And it's so hard for us not to go intensely. Mm-hmm. I tell everyone, if this is sort of your deload day, just deload. But as soon as the clock starts, everyone is just like
it's like a full send. It's a drug.
It's so hard not to. And so I think that a lot of people would do better if they pick and chose very carefully, like, I am going to go full send on these particular days, especially when you're focusing on certain aspects of your strength training.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That really is, like, Sam has the answer. That's kind of echo that. I would definitely echo that opinion. And just to put it in my own words, most CrossFitters that are performance-based need to work out less often and really focus in on recovery. And understand, here's an example. This weekend, you guys have the quarterfinals this weekend, right? No one's coming in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday going all out. Mm-hmm. If anything, I'm going to tell the group, you should pick Monday or Tuesday to go hard at, the other day to chill a little bit, Wednesday take off, Thursday do some slow conditioning. It's almost like you're taking an extra 2 days away from working hard so that you can what? Give your max effort Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And if you want to apply that to the rest of the year, your normal week-to-week training, there needs to be less amount of times during the week for that you're going all out. And here's the question. Sam said, and as Sam brought this up, my mental health somewhat relies on me coming to the gym and starting off my day that way and feeling accomplished and feeling healthy. And you know what? I'm all about that, right? I feel the same way. I do take more days off than I used to. And I right now do feel, maybe not right now because I'm not training to compete, but I feel healthier and I feel just as fit. I'm working out less, I feel healthier and I feel just as fit. So how do I get stronger? How do I get in better shape? It's not necessarily just come in every day, do 2 days, even though I would love to do that mentally. That would make me happy. It would make me feel good and make me feel accomplished. You have to know that with every extra session you do that where you're not fully recovered, you're taking a bite out of something else. And eventually you get to a point where you get burned out, you get hurt, injured, all this stuff. And it could have easily been avoided by simply taking more rest days, right? And this is why I love long-term approach training is, it's like the person that's trying to lose 10 pounds before they go on vacation next week so they can look good on their pictures in the album, right? Or whatever, their social media. I guess I just dated myself saying picture album. But that carries over. Like, oh my God, I have a competition in 2 weeks. I have to train 4 times. Like, you know what? Sure, go ahead. But I think the long-term progress approach is to take more days off and then come in and just increase your intensity when you're here. So any closing thoughts on that?
Yeah, the other thing is that if you're working on a very specific type of movement or exercise, mm-hmm. You should talk to your coach, but you could also vary the routine. So let's suppose you're always using a barbell for your overheads or something, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe scale it and change it to dumbbells or, make it more like if you're doing certain movements and you're like, you know what, I really need to focus on my asymmetry of strength, scale it to single legs, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Like most of the time, if we're doing the same movements over and over and over again to try to get better at that movement, we might not necessarily break through that plateau on that movement. Right. We actually might have to change up something about that movement. So if your hip hinge is not awesome, maybe you need to think about, all right, how can I change up this movement so I'm hip hinging but slightly differently? Maybe it's right. a pause. Mm-hmm. If there are back squats at our program, maybe you go lighter and do a pause, mm-hmm. right? And just instead of the RX on there, get the scaled, but you know you're working to try to break through that plateau and you're doing something different. So, you know, this is where having a coach can be really helpful, because you could say, I'm really stuck on this movement. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, and Dave has done this. I know you've done this with athletes all the time. You're like, okay, so for this week, for this WOD, yeah. do this and like, do right. this.
Yeah. I've done that for tomorrow's ring muscle workout for a few people already.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they're not doing muscle ups every time. It's just the last round and the other movements leading up to it. Are different movements.
Yeah. Right. So work with someone to change it up a little bit, work on the weakness and vary it in order to break through
that. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think the macro level answer to this is intentional training, right? Like, have intentions when you show up, right? The person that asked this question, I know who it is, and she works very hard. She comes in and she just basically wants some guidance on, hey, I feel like I'm not getting better anymore. What should I simply take more days off, work harder? Should I come in every day and just tap the brakes? And the answer is going to be intentional training. And, you know, these are where the conversations with a coach would really help you out, because the answer can vary person to person based on experience, volume tolerance, lifestyle, all that kind of stuff. But intentional training is vital to everyone. All right.
And one quick plug. I know you don't plug your Next Level.
Yeah.
But I think that that's where Next Level is very helpful for people, because they have helped, including me, when mm-hmm. I've done it. If there's something that I need to focus on, I'm really sort of stuck at. I've seen the programming that you do for that.
Yep.
And I also, just a quick plug, because I know you probably won't. You just announced this past week that you're offering affiliate programming yep. for others, other gyms. And, you know, based on what I've seen of your programming for 9 years, you are very, like you said, intentional
right.
about working specific aspects. And I know that your strength in programming is being able to, one, minimize the risk of injury,
yep.
two, whatever aspect that you have chosen to focus on for the gym or for athletes, you're very good at building that up. And cycling through different aspects of fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And three, you give so much thought into people being able to do the workouts. Like, I've seen some other programming, like, I won't name other program, yeah. but it's like, it's effing heavy, and right. there's so much volume, and you feel like you're dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like sometimes that programming is not as helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the type of thing that you need to sort of have a coach work with you specifically in order to not get injured, not feel beat up, and yet make progress.
Yeah. No, thanks for that. And I think we will have an episode coming up on just the whole affiliate programming idea and whether you're going to be on it or not, just something that some bullet points I think every gym could benefit from, including us. Like, we're still trying to make our programming better here. So last question. Okay. This is kind of like in the same conversation, actually. When is the best time to learn a skill? Example, rope climb, ring muscle up, open gym by yourself while Googling instructions, try to follow an online program, hire a trainer. What should I do if I want to learn a skill? Excellent question. One of the questions that, as a coach of a growing gym that now has a lot of members, has been a stressor for myself, that I will say this, it was a lot easier to help people with skills 6 years ago
yep.
than it is now.
Yeah.
A, just the volume of people, and B, the varying degree of talent level and ability levels, I should say. I shouldn't say talent, ability level, right? We have people in the gym that can do 15 ring muscle-ups in a row, and then we have some people that want to ring muscle-up that can't do a pull-up yet, right? And everyone in between. And it's hard, and this is something I'm working on the side that I really want to get out there to the whole gym at some point, part of the affiliate programming as well, is that, like, hey, you are level 1 through 5 at every single movement. Level 5 can do this. Level 1 is here. You have to know, and here's a test. This is what level you currently reside in. Okay, hey, you're at level 3 on ring muscle up, Sam. This is what you need to do over the next year to try and get yourself to level 4. And that's kind of something, and I'm working on that with wall walks. I'm working on that with Olympic lifting, that kind of stuff. And I think it would be, it's a cool, like what I like where it's going right now. I just need to firm it up and clean it up and make sure it's foolproof. Because again, you're going to have a volume of people on this thing. You have to basically answer the questions before they get asked. And this is why, the reason I'm doing it is like, you're just, you know, well, I'm one person. Our coaches, they're one person. They have families, they have their own training. This is a part-time job for a lot of people. You can't just expect someone to meet you here every Sunday to work on your ring muscle-ups while there's nine other people that want work on rope climbs, right? So what should an athlete do that's in this position?
My first answer is all of the above.
Yeah.
Try everything.
Right.
Like, there's no reason not to try everything.
Right.
The second thing I would say is how receptive are you personally to learning that new skill?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what modality are you going to open your mind to? So any one of these ways, you could practice all by yourself and YouTube all day, and that might open your mind. They might say the same things on that YouTube video as someone standing next to you is saying in the gym, but because the person on the YouTube video is Rich Froning and the person in the gym telling you is Sam Rhee, you might be like, Sam doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. But then you watch it on YouTube and you're like, oh, well, I really should do that.
Right.
Like, it's how receptive are you as a person mm-hmm. to receiving that instruction? And some people just do really well by watching YouTube videos.
I've self-taught myself so much on YouTube. With every movement in CrossFit, like including rowing, like I'll spend a half hour watching rowing instructional videos and apply that to workouts. But I know that's not for everyone. What else do you think about it?
I mean, I also think different trainers. That's why people are always complaining. Like Ash is learning something, and you're like, I told you that 15 times. But then Adam Ramsam tells you that, and you get it. It's like it's the modality or the way it's being delivered.
Yep.
So it's okay to try all these sort of different things. I think you know, there are so many online progression programs now. There's mm-hmm. like how to get a ring muscle up in 3 weeks and something like that.
Right.
And so you can try all of that, and they all might work. I think honestly, personally, I do like starting with YouTube videos and stuff, mm-hmm. but at some point for me to have to break through, I do need live guidance.
Absolutely.
I need to video myself. Mm-hmm. I need to sort of get that course correction feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing is you have to have patience. There's a lot of times where you will plateau for the longest time and you're like, I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it. I saw Susan with double unders, like mm-hmm. the same thing. It was single double for literally like months. And then something.
Now she dominates him.
Broke through and now she had him. But it took a long time. And I think some of that for a lot of athletes is complementary training. So sometimes it's like, you know what? I can't do ring muscle ups. So let me strengthen the muscles and the skills I need.
Mm-hmm.
Don't keep trying to fail ring muscle ups and then come back like a month later and see how it goes.
Right. So I think, and echo again, same thing. We're speaking the same language here. Yes, be coachable. I would say one thing, especially if it's a skill, a hard skill that you're not close to, right? This person that asked, you know, if the ring muscle up is your goal, I could say right now, you're not there strength-wise yet. So that, and when you ask a coach this question, how do I get better? And you need to be ready for an answer you might not want to hear.
Right.
And you need to be okay with that. And I think it's the coach's responsibility to be completely honest. Like, I hate coaches that fabricate and, you know, beat around the bush. Like, hey, you're not strong enough for the ring muscle up yet. That's the end of the discussion. Now, that part of the discussion. The discussion now will move on to, what do we need to do to get you stronger so that you can try these ring muscle ups at some point? So I think step one for an athlete that wants to get better and you have all these different options, but you're overwhelmed, you don't know where to go, is to have a conversation with a coach. And this is something that might need to, in my opinion, all right, protecting the coaches here, you need to reach out to that coach, whether email, text, ask them, hey, when are you free? When can I come in and talk to you? Don't do it in between classes.
Absolutely.
Don't ask a coach to come help you with a ring muscle up 3 minutes after class and 2 minutes before the next. You'll get almost zero instruction or bad instruction. That's just not the right time to do it.
They're overwhelmed just dealing with class.
Right. My recommendation would be like, hey, when is the time that – because I've done this. I can't even count how many hundreds of times. Hey, let's meet at the gym next Tuesday at 3 o'clock, and we'll talk, or we'll text each other back and forth. Like, you find a way to communicate, and then the question is, all right, where do I currently stand with this skill? And again, this is where my level 1 through 5 talk starts to come in. And that's like, okay, so I'm currently at this level. I can't do this. What do I need to do? And Sam used the word earlier that everyone needs to know if you are trying to learn a skill. You need to know the progressions, all right? What do you need to have done before you try this, all right? When someone, Sally Lee is currently pretty close to a muscle up, a bar muscle up, okay? She's going to get it pretty soon. And the other day she was working on it, unsolicited. I said, like, hey, just real quick, try to get your stomach to the bar. And she did. And because she almost got her stomach to the bar, she almost got the muscle up. And I said, like, what if that's your next progression? How about if we made a rule? You're not allowed to try another bar muscle up until you do 50 stomach to bar pull-ups over the course of the next 6 weeks.
I don't know.
Five a week. I'm not saying 50. Five a week.
I thought you said unbroken. I was like, whoa.
No. 50, like, over the course. Like, build, like, Kelly Cavan right now, we're working on her snatch.
Yeah.
And we're going back to 55 to 65 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I said, we are going to do 100 snatches over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks before we go to 70 pounds. And then we're going to do that 100 times before we go to 75, because we want to get the mechanics. We want to train everything perfectly and not rush, right? Sam said, be patient. When you're trying to learn a skill or you're trying to get stronger with the barbell, you have to not put a timeline on it. You have to be very patient and understand and respect the progression part of it. So I think that conversation with the coach needs to happen first. Then yes, research on your own. Do everything you can. Meet us halfway, right? Don't expect a coach to do everything for you. You have to do the work even when no one's looking. You have to do the work, and you have to be ready for an answer you might not want to hear. And then from there, it can go into a couple different directions. An online program, how to get a muscle up in 3 weeks. You can hire a trainer. You can hop on a online program. But remember, the program is not as important as your approach when you're training. And putting a timeline on it could actually put a detriment on what you're actually trying to pursue.
Right? I would say the only other thing I would agree with 1,000%, obviously, with everything you said, is when you do ask a coach and you listen to them, you have to buy in. Right. Like, I've seen people ask casually to, like, you know, and they'll hear something and they won't really fully
right. They don't hear what they want to hear.
Yeah, they don't. Right. Yeah, exactly. They're like, no, I don't think that's really what I need.
Right.
It's like, well, if you're going to ask somebody,
right,
you better trust them. Otherwise, don't ask.
Right. Like, right.
And if they're saying something that, you know, you didn't expect or you're like, you disagree with,
yeah,
like you said, maybe you have to open your mind and actually follow that.
Yeah. And like, yes, hey, coaches out there, don't be a dick about it. Like, don't be mean when they're like, oh no, dude, you suck, you can't even do toes to bar, like, you can't do a muscle. Don't go in that direction, but you do need to be honest, and the athlete needs to be able to accept honesty. And it's like, to quote Hinshaw, like, we'll always try to help you get to whatever your goal is. We don't care until you say you're not going to do it anymore, but it's not our job to tell you whether or not you can get there. You know, we will help you get to these progressions, but just be ready for those kind of answers and be ready to grind and be able to do a lot of that stuff on your own, because every accomplished athlete that you see out there, let's stick with CrossFit, we'll stay away from other things, they did a lot of stuff on their own. And I feel that way about life too. You can't always be spoon-fed, you know, as an adult into your adult life. You have to do a lot of the work by yourself. A coach, a program, that's kind of just like a little push, you know, but you have to go do the most of the work.
I will do one real life example. I used to play violin. I used to play a lot.
Really? Oh. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. I played since I was like 4.
Oh, wow.
And I played until I was 18 and I got to college, and then I like never played again.
Okay.
But, you know, I played in a city symphony. I you know, did recitals. I did all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you could always tell who put the work in. Like, when I really wasn't sending it, I would just show up for my lesson every week, and my teacher could totally tell if I was putting the work in or mm-hmm. I was not putting the work in. Mm-hmm. And you know yourself too. And that's really where all of it is. Your teacher, your coach, all of that stuff, like you said, doesn't mean anything unless you are the one putting that effort in on your own, mm-hmm. thinking about it, working on it. And it's fun. Like, it should be fun. Like,
yeah.
I enjoy when I'm learning a new skill, I enjoy watching videos. I enjoy thinking about it. I enjoy, you know, working on those things. And you should too. It should be a joy, because once you finally get it, it should be like a huge accomplishment. I can't remember. You know, I remember when Susan got her double unders, how happy she was and how long she'd been working
on
it.
Good analogy.
And so I think, you know, don't be afraid to do that. You should want to. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why are you doing it?
Right, yeah.
Like, just so you could say you can do it?
Yeah. Like, well, that's one of the questions I ask people when they say they want a skill. I'm like, I would like to know why. If the answer could be like, hey, it's cool and I want to do cool things with my body.
Awesome.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But like, it can't be because I want to say I can do it. You know, like I always say, any goal. I remember talking to a CrossFit competitor that's back in the day, and I still feel this way. If no one ever knew what your accomplishment was, would you still pursue it? And if the answer is no, to show off and show that I did it, then I don't think you should pursue that. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you for the second ever Q&A session. It looks like the camera's only pointing at me right now, so we will see what the YouTube video looks like. I did not have anything to do with that, but we will try to get that fixed by next week. Please tune into next week's episode as well. We're going to have a couple quarterfinalists up with here. We haven't decided who's going to be on there yet. It's going to be based on performance. No, just kidding. But we can't wait to go over that with you guys, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, everybody, for taking the time out of your day to listen to the Herd Fit podcast. Be on the lookout for next week's episode.